Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and I wanted to go through some of the rookies here that we have in the receiver tier and sort of do a rundown of them. I think that there's some interesting stuff. Again, this is going to be AOD applied and some of the work that we did for the book. There is some data here that I think will help us. So again, we're going to look at the guys that have that didn't hit this year. Okay, so non-hits, but that ran 200 routes. Okay, so there's a decent group of these. There's nine of them. It's Devonta Smith, Rashad Bateman, Nico Collins, Elijah Moore, Josh Palmer, Rondell Moore, Terrace Marshall, De'Ami Brown, and Kadarius Toney. Does not qualify, but he missed by like three routes. So I'm including him in this range as being inclusive in this. We're going to talk about him, but just realize that he doesn't technically qualify by the threshold by like it's less than 10 routes. I think he ran 197 routes last year, so he just barely misses that threshold benchmarker that I talked about in the book. So there's a slight bit of caution there on that. He ran 196, so missed by four. But it's close enough that we can use a little logic and apply it. So where do we find ourselves? Well, I think we can start with Kadarius Toney. And Kadarius Toney, I think for a lot of things, is going to be him and Jalen Waddle probably be like the Justin Herbert examples from the quarterback position. What do I mean by that? Well, when you look at the ordering of profiles, for example, so the ordering of top 10 quarterbacks, right? That has been random. First round wide receivers also been random in rookie drafts. Rookie draft wide receiver ADP has been random in terms of its performance. So when you look at all those things, you can say, okay, well, there's like I think a lot of things to be cautious on. One of them is spending up. Now, we're not going to learn this lesson this year because it's Ja'Marr Chase, and that's just not what's going to happen. We won't learn this lesson. We will think we're going to draft the next Ja'Marr Chase, which may or may not happen. But over time, it has been very much that those have been questionable. Those have been suboptimal picks, right? Drafting at the top and not trading down, or drafting and trading up at the wide receiver position is a tried and true terrible strategy. So I think that is, that's one thing that we learned from this. But the other thing that we learned from this is definitely that wide receivers, if you can wait on them, right, if you're willing to arb them, and this requires you to be different, right, this requires you to be different, this requires you to, I want to be the tax man, if you will. Like, I want to collect the residual on what everyone else wants to make sure thing bets. I'll just be perfectly content to say I don't know anything, and I will let you make the certain bet. I'll take the random bet, and like that's where we'll find ourselves, right? That's, I'll have more shots, right? Or I'll have more assets, or I'll have more, flexibility. You can take the more specific certain shot, which I know historically is the wrong bet, and you can take that, and I'll just be fine here. That is going to be my play going forward. That is going to be a core analytics of dynasty strategy. Especially when you can get, multiple assets on top of that, right? It's Bateman. I've talked about Trey Sermon, right? It's Trey Sermon or Bateman for Jalen Waddle and Kadarius Toney, right? It's that type of deal. So that would be sort of my, my overall, my initial sort of Kadarius Toney thought. When you look at his yards per route run, 2.14, right? That's really elite. Like that's way up there. You sort of apply the yards per route run numbers from the book. That would put him at an 87% chance for a hit in the next 4 years. So that's really good. When you look at implied top half hit over the next 4 years, right? So a top 12 seasonal finish, 67%. So again, you look at that. That's a really steep number there. Again, like you, we'll talk about some other one of these, but that's still a really, really high number, whereas you get further down that curve, it really starts to fall off quickly. I think at this point, if you're looking for him, he would be the person that I would pick in this range, right? And again, I think you have to blend a couple of things here. You have to blend him, right? You have to blend taking him versus vets and against him versus younger players, how you might arb the two of them. I think that's a key thing. But when you go over and you look at it, you say, okay, like what kind of will my play be? Well, he's going, down at wide receiver 34. So that's ahead of Sutton. That's with Gabe Davis, Hunter Renfro, Chase Claypool. All of those guys are in that sort of range. He's going ahead of guys like Michael Thomas, Tyler Lockett. He's going well behind Bateman, for example. He's going behind Marquise Brown. The Marquise Brown Bateman angle is fascinating to me as well. He's going behind Darnell Mooney. I think there's a couple of ways that you go about this. I think from this range, I think I would start with, and this is a good example of like sort of, I think AOD applied. I would start with these numbers as a base rate number. And what do they tell you from a base rate number? Well, they tell you that, I think outside of, it's probably too high of a number would be what I would say. Like it's probably not a reasonable, all things considered number. But I would take the under on 87% of him hitting, because there's just too much uncertainty. But what I would say is, so I'd start there. I'm going to use the mental calculus to come down a little bit. There's uncertainty with his situation as well. I think that there's reasons to think that, that him coming in, that there was some character stuff. Again, I don't know how much to grant that, but I would say if I'm sort of looking at this from a base rate and I was thinking, let's say 75%, right? 66% base rate for a hit rate, something like that, based on sort of where these are. I mean, that something in that range, I think, makes some sense. And you say, okay, like, all right, that's kind of, but that's still really good, right? I would say, I guess my interpretation of this would be a couplefold. One would be, all right, if you sort of look at the receivers over the next, 3 years or so, you'd expect about from his range of the draft, he's going wide receiver 34. That's about a 48% hit rate over the next 3 years. So it's maybe 52-53% over the next four, something like that. So again, he's well above that would be sort of what I would think when you look at him for a top half seasonal finish here over the next 3 years, it's 28%. So again, I would basically give maybe 10-20% higher than that. So I'd go, or 10-20% improvement. So I'd maybe go, let's say it's 33%. We'll just use that. I think what you're seeing from the Tony numbers is that he is well above that in terms of where he's at. So he's well above those numbers from what his cost is. If you just were to sort of take him from there, he would be, those yards per route run numbers would be like a top five wide receiver odds of hitting number. I don't think that he warrants that, but I think when you sort of, he obviously doesn't warrant that, right? He hasn't hit yet. He hasn't done enough bigger sample size, yada, yada. But I think when you look at his numbers and you say, wow, like how do you value that? I'd rather err on the side of missing on him than taking a shot. Like I think the wrong bet to make is Chase Claypool a couple rounds earlier. Like that's the wrong way to try and bet this profile. You take the low sample size bet that was outrageously efficient and you bet on that. Right, you bet on that, especially where you see it like, hey, this pops up as being really elite in some of these things. That is a profile that you bet on. You don't do it on Sutton with the hopes that Rodgers is going to be there. You don't do it on Mike Williams. Renfro, no. Like, Rashad Bateman, we'll get into that in a minute. Like, when you start looking at these, like, it's clear to me that if you're going to take a swing for the fence type swing, you take it on Kadarius Toney. That's how I think Kadarius Toney. He's proven enough that I don't know if he's ever going to come full circle, but he has the best odds in terms of some of this run basis stuff. He's basically 0.4 yards per route run better than anyone else that hit this threshold and didn't hit this year. So when you look at that, you have to weight that heavy, right? How do you value him versus his college profile? I think I understand breakout age and I agree with it. I think that there are certain circumstances where you use that as a starting point. It shouldn't be the end all be all. I think this is probably where analytics gets it wrong. It has to be a starting point, and then you have to use your logic and judgment afterwards to try and figure out, is that the right number, right? You should use it and then double check it, kind of like a math problem, right? You know, when I was younger, and I was in like middle school and stuff, I would be in math, and my dad was a math major, and I was horrible at math, which is interesting. I can't get my dad at all interested in the stats of football. It's totally a reversal of things, and it's kind of hilarious, you know, familial arc and all of that. But he would always tell me, like, check it both ways, right? If you're doing a math multiplication problem, like, check it, you know, do the division, like, do it backwards. Does it work both ways, right? It should work both ways, like, do it both ways. I think this is a good example of that, right? Like, all right, what does Kadarius Toney's profile tell us? Well, it tells us that coming in, like, there's some holes in it. Again, he's suspended. But I think if you sort of take a look at it and say, all right, like, on a smaller sample, or when you, he was a positional convert, right? So how do you sort of value that? And it's tough, right? I mean, these things aren't easy, right? That's why you take the cheapest guy, because it's really hard. So you don't spend a lot, or you take multiple shots at the same profile, right? That's why I'm an advocate of that strategy. How do we value that now? Well, I think you have to, and this is a mistake that I made earlier on in my career, and I'm not doing it anymore. Especially, I think we have good guardrails of yards per route run and some of these more advanced metrics. Now we can sort of look at this and say, all right, like, it is, like, we have to adjust from that base rate. Like, if we had just looked at, he would have been in amongst the only guys, like, to not break out for first round wide receivers. Like, that no one's hit from doing that. Well, hasn't hit yet, but he's, like, proven that can be very good, right? In terms of how he is, you know, in terms of the just his yards per route run usage, right? Just his you know, some of the other stuff as well with him, I think is impactful. You know, his you know, when you look at hit some of his stuff versus expectation and the like, he is you know, his PPR for routes run, for example, is basically one of the best in the class, right? You sort of look at that, and I start, you know, it's targets per route run. It is 27%. Like, that's an outrageous number. He's above expectation in terms of yards per route run, for example. You know, so you sort of look at these things, and his points per target isn't too high. So that actually is like, oh, all right, like, wait a second, like, there's some room to grow here. So all of those things, I sort of look at that, and it's like, okay, like, these things all match up in a way that's, like, very interesting. So I do think we have to update from the fact that it was a poor profile coming in. I do think we have to keep in mind that there was some off-field problems. But I think we should be optimistic. I think if you're going to take a swing at a guy that's going to make an impact in that range, I think there's a couple of names that you do it on. I think you do, one is Kadarius Toney. The other one is Mike Thomas. And I think that those are the guys from that range that could potentially hit big. You know, and then outside of that, you know, and that's, but for example, hitting big, right? We're talking about, like, a top 10 finish. I think Tyler Lockett is a guy in that range that is probably more likely to be a top 20 finisher. Brandon Cook's more likely to be a top 20 finisher. Again, there's a gap in range. You can do both for what it's worth. But what I wouldn't do is I wouldn't take, you know, Chase Claypool as the shot that I'm going to make in that range, or Bateman as the shot, the big shot that I'm going to make in that range. I think that's misplaced. So I do think it's important to talk about. But Tony's a big one in terms of understanding Tony. I think he's one to talk about. I think it's I like these when we write a book and totally, I guess, like, theoretical perspective, and then it becomes very clear early on, like, who are the guys that will apply this, and Kadarius Tony's one of them. So high on Kadarius Tony from his cost. De'Ami Brown, Terrace Marshall, both under De'Ami Brown 0.82 yards per route run, 0.5 for Terrace Marshall. I'm fine sort of pivoting off of them at cost. Like, if you can get what you paid for them, go ahead and do it. You know, you're looking at sub 10% hit rates for those guys. Really bad starts in terms of just using the yards per route run stuff. Again, you have to adjust for base rates and all that stuff. But again, I think like this should tell you, if you don't do it early, if you don't at least check the box early, it's pretty questionable. Again, Marshall ran 277 routes. It's well enough to qualify. So that would be my caution there. De'Ami Brown ran 201, so we just qualified the 200 number. But again, I would be pretty dubious of both of those guys there. Rondale Moore is interesting, 1.65 yards per route run. He actually came down a little bit in terms of where he was at earlier on in the season, and he was super efficient earlier on, and that declined a little bit. And I think there's maybe some reason for that stylistically. I think you could maybe point to, hey, some Kyler Murray injuries, and they were just a lesser passing team. I think that's a plausible explanation. Zach Ertz is probably a plausible explanation as well. Out of sample, which would be when Zach Ertz did not play. Rondale Moore, 6 games, averaged 47.7 yards per game. That's good for 763 on the season. That was his pace for the season, would have been 64 receptions, 763, and 5 touchdowns. So again, that's decent. It has been about 11.8 points per game. Again, not world beating, but you definitely firmly put him on the progress mark without with Ertz there. So basically second half of the season, it's a big drop. It's 5.8 points per game. So again, that's basically, if you were to sort of just think about it, it's a touchdown per game difference. That's not how the numbers work out. In actuality, he's actually targeted, and this is really interesting and weird, and I'm this is why I don't think it's necessarily player specific about why there's a difference here, but I think it warrants some more digging into, which is why Rondale Moore fell off. He actually went up in targets per game, which I think is, that's odd, right? So he actually has 4.75 targets per game in games where Zach Ertz plays. He plummets 18.62 yards. So I'm guessing some of it's ADOT, would be sort of my hunch, but it's not totally, and some of the quarterback change as well. But the interesting thing is then you've got Hopkins as well. So I think that's something that we probably need to warrant a little bit more research on when, you know, as the offseason goes along. I am firmly in the, I think he can play. I wonder what the ceiling is. Would sort of be the, I guess my initial reaction for Rondale Moore, 52% implied base rate in terms of a hit, and a 30% top 12 seasonal finish rate. So again, I think these numbers treat him well. And when you look at it, you know, he's up there in the top 3 or 4 of the guys that didn't hit. So I think the numbers treat him well. Optimism would be generally what I would say. But I am not going to pay a huge cost. I don't necessarily, you know, I don't think anyone's going to put him as being a, up in the top 20 or 25 or anything like that at present. He's 39 in terms of where he's at keep trade cut, which again, I think is reasonable. I would have him behind Tony. I think that's right. Just because I think a success for Tony is probably bigger than Rondale Moore, not knocking Rondale Moore's size, and so the size of the hit for Rondale Moore, for example. So that would sort of be my different angle there with him. Again, I think at his cost, it's a little bit different. I'd probably rather have Lockett. I'd probably rather have Cooks, Michael Thomas. Whereas I think Tony's upside portfolio is just a little bit bigger that warrants maybe that tilt. And again, they're slightly different costs, and you're making slightly different bets as well. Couple other ones here. We have Josh Palmer, 1.2 yards per route run. I think the thing for him will be to watch and see if there is a shot that that Mike Williams potentially walks, and then maybe is Palmer a pivot guy? They have enough cap spots where I don't think my response to Justin Herbert being great in a rookie deal would not be to trade, you know, to ride into week one with Josh Palmer as being my wide receiver too. Like, that wouldn't be the lesson that I would take. It would be, you know, bring in Davante Adams or something like that. So, and they have a ton of cap spots. So I think that that would sort of be my angle on this. But I think he's interesting from a, if Mike Williams walks, could you potentially pivot from him? He's probably shown enough to not have imploded, but I think it's probably a capping situation, which I don't think the market thought that highly of him anyways. 17% implied hit rate, which put him about where you would expect someone with his pedigree to be at this point. So I think that's interesting. Elijah Moore is the other one here outside of Devontae Smith that really stood out in terms of high hit rate. So Elijah Moore, 61% is his implied hit rate based off of his 1.75 yards per route run. 37% top half seasonal finish hit rate here over the next 4 years. So that's good as well. I think this passing game is really interesting in terms of a ton to block him. It's a little bit like the Giants when you look at it. Like, yeah, there's some bigger, I guess, named investments. But I don't think, you know, there's anyone being a huge difference maker. I think Corey Davis is good. I don't know if he's going to hold back a really good Elijah Moore. Like, I think they can both coexist. They can both probably be top 40 guys. You know, that wouldn't, I don't think it's a volume squeeze like that. And then Crowder's going to probably not be there. Mims isn't probably going to be there. You know, I know Berrios came on the end of the season and stuff, but I mean, how many teams has Berrios been on? Everything would lead me to believe that he is not, a big time difference maker. So Elijah Moore, I think, certainly interesting. And when you look at his cost, he is more costly. And again, these things can get really different, right? Why is he cost so much more than a guy like Kadarius Toney? Well, he's 17th at wide receiver. So I'm a full out on that cost. I just think that there's other bets that you can make. When you look at it, you know, his implied numbers, for example, would put him, you know, right about there in terms of his hit rate and the like. But I just, that's not really how I want to go shopping. You know, his implied hit rate would be equal to about wide receiver 21. Probably actually a little bit below that as well. You know, and so he's up at 17. So I would take him probably a little bit later than he's going. He's firmly interesting, but probably the cost is going to be one that I'm just not going to pay. That's not really how I think we should invest in the position. Then Nico Collins and Rashad Bateman. So I think Nico Collins and Rashad Bateman, they basically perform essentially exactly the same. 1.24 yards per route run for Nico Collins, 1.26 for Rashad Bateman. You could sort of say, all right, like that's middling. I mean, actually, I don't think it's a difference-making, consequential, or anything for Nico Collins, but it actually puts him in a level where I might think of him maybe in a little bit different way than I would have. He wasn't a name coming in, I guess, would say that I was super enthusiastic about, but he was, performs enough to get on the field and playing basically 10% market share. When you look at these guys, that's the third highest behind Elijah Moore and Devonta Smith for a season long number, for example. His expected yards per route run, he was 13% below it. So that's when you look at these, like that's actually pretty close to the middle in terms of these. The only real overperformers were like Rondale Moore in terms of that metric and Kadarius Toney. So when you look at that, those guys were all below expectations. He would be pretty close to the median, honestly, in terms of expectations amongst this group. So our performance against expectations. So that's I think he's interesting from that perspective. I'm probably not in on him at any cost. Again, I don't choose to value guys and really his range. It just tends to clog up roster spots, would sort of be my thought. But I think he's interesting vis-a-vis Rashad Bateman, who basically is essentially the exact same as he is. And that gives me a lot of pause. Again, I think you should take early signal from these numbers, and I think that that's a spot. I think definitely pivoting off of the early sample wide receivers is a worthwhile thing to do. I think there's some stat out there, and I don't know what it is, but it's something to do with receiving yards or something, that there's a number that if you get to or whatever. I don't exactly trust it, but I think he's going to be somewhere near it. It's in the 400 or 500 yard range. I know it pops up every year. He's going to be sort of in that range of people, oh, he's a bust, or oh, he's on the right side of the tracks or whatever. I think when you look at it from a efficiency and effectiveness perspective, I think you have to take this as a negative. And he had enough snaps, enough routes, right? He doubled up the threshold. He basically ran the second most routes of this group. So I know people will point, oh, it's just one season. Like, actually, we do get a fair amount of signal here in that one season. So I'm pivoting out, like, at his cost. I mean, absolutely give me Marquise Brown over him. I don't think that's a close bet. I would take Kadarius Toney plus for Bateman pretty easily. That would be one that I would do. You know, I think you could pivot to a guy like Keenan Allen in that range. That would make some sense. Pivot to a guy like Ridley, use him as a package-up player. I think all those things make some sense. You know, can you go from him and a quarterback to, a better quarterback for someone that's trying to rebuild? I think all of those things are valuable plays. And honestly, probably a hidden efficiency and a hidden usage for these wide receivers that maybe we don't catch in numbers per se. We haven't figured out a way to measure yet. All right, last but not least, we've got Devontae Smith. So I'd say about Devontae Smith, like, he's got a top, you know, he's sort of on the progression track of success. And you say, all right, like, what are we thinking? Well, he's a top 20, you know, he finished at 29. We know that wide receiver three type finishes, so wide receiver 25 to 36. That's a good marker in your in your rookie season, right? That's a developmental hit from the 2021 edition. We know that the hit rate on those guys is pretty good. I think it probably speaks to a couple things. Hey, he has a pretty good usage. At least he's got a pretty good projected workload, for example. Those things tend to be relatively static year over year. I mean, he performed basically right about at expectation, so you think that's actually pretty good. And you could say, all right, that's helpful. He ran a lot of routes as well, so it was partially volume, partially effectiveness. He ran a lot of routes per dropback. They throw the ball a lot, so that's probably the thing that would cause you some concern. 19.5% of his routes he was targeted on. So that's like 73rd percentile. So that's pretty good. I don't think it's elite, but I think it's pretty good. Target share 17.4%. Again, you want that to be up in the 20s to be a big time difference maker. So I think, you know, this is really, like, I think the numbers treat him fairly. About 60% hit rate, about 33% top half hit rate. I think those things are fair. Again, I'd probably take the under on the top half hit rate. But listen, if he were to stay healthy and sort of, get a 20% bump or something like that in his targets per game, and all of a sudden he's like a high sevens guy, could he potentially get that? Yeah, I think so. Is he a guy that I think could be a top six finisher? Probably not, just because that tends to be a more of a straight up climb from 15 to six or whatever. That's a big, outside of some really positive touchdown variants, like, that's a different strata. So that would sort of be my takeaway on him. Again, I think at cost, what I am interested in is a tactical play. I am interested in the guys who have not elite looking profiles, right? Things that really indicate us at cheap cost. I'm interested in them. And then I'm probably not interested in holding developmental guys at high costs. Right. So that's the deal. I think you have to be very limited in this territory. I know that people are like, oh, you don't like wide receivers. I do, in the sense of I like what we can use them for. And if Devontae Smith is, if people are have a residual value of him as like, hey, he's insulated long term, that's the great thing to use right now. Right. Like that value, that's something in addition to production that you're valuing. We're much better at valuing production, evaluating production, figuring out how to get production, how to project targets and those sorts of things. We're much better at that because that's stickier than the value is year to year. So if the argument for him is like, oh, he's got 2 or 3 years sort of, and he can really develop into something on the way up, we're getting him in like a top 18 cost. Like I kind of like where he's heading. if that's the argument for him, I'm totally bailing because I can sort of I can take out that residual, whether that's picks or whether that's other players, right? And I can I'm absolutely doing that in terms of a pivot there for him. So, all right, well, that'll pretty much do it for this episode. I hope that helps out some applied stuff. Again, it's a little bit longer. I'm just trying to hit as many guys as I think are relevant. And again, the best part about not talking about rookies right now is we can dive into some of these vets and not feel like we're on a time crunch or anything like that. So I'm still going to push off the rookies. Again, this is the first show of February. I swore off doing rookies until at least February, and I haven't decided to pick them up yet. So we're going to do some more of this stuff. I think there's some high-value stuff here. I think there's some good opportunities here in terms of some of these guys that we're going to spend some time doing that before we dive into what everyone else is doing. So, all right, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.